Welcome to VIV Today, the podcast from the newsroom of business in Vancouver. I'm Kirk LaPointe, publisher and executive editor. My guest today is one of our country's leading entrepreneurs and innovators, having built the country's largest biotech firm over a 30-year period and garnered along the way international recognition. We don't give nearly enough time and attention to stem cell technologies based here in Greater Vancouver, nor to its founder, Dr. Alan Eaves. It's my pleasure to welcome him to the podcast. Good to see you.
Good morning, Kirk.
Yeah, let's look at this. When you launch a company like this, you put a lot of your own assets on the line in this case. In your case, it was a mortgage, I understand.
Yes, right. You see, my wife and I founded the Terry Fox Laboratory and there's for cancer research, and there's never enough money to do research. So we did start to sell some of the media that we developed, and it started to really take off, and the Cancer Foundation felt that I should set up a company myself and buy the business from them, which I did. And in order to do that, I had to mortgage my house, and I got a loan from Western Economic Diversification, which I paid back. And we went into business in 1993, in actually July 2nd.
Wow. Okay. So we're nearly right on the spot of the 30-year period. Can you look back 30 years ago and go, what's the biggest thing I didn't know that I've had to learn?
Well, the people really love our products, right? And I didn't think they would grow the way they did, but you know, we've grown at basically over 20% each year over the last 30 years.
So, that's pretty incredible. That is really an incredible accomplishment, right? Yeah. So you didn't know people were going to love the product. What about you as that entrepreneur, as the person that had to build these pieces together? You look back at what's the big part that you had to learn?
Well, I read a lot of business books, but I did my sort of home MBA, as it were, right? And there are just lots of really good books on business. So, and sales and marketing, and then the 1 Minute Manager, which is the largest selling business book of all time, right? Takes you 2 hours to read it, but it's full of all sorts of wisdom. So I read all these books and learned a lot from them. But it's really the passion of the employees that we had. You know, I ran the company and still do like a graduate training program. There's a lot of freedom. It appeals to people who have a science background. They can actually do what they want. Yeah, they have to come up with new products, but there's tremendous satisfaction in actually developing a new product and having your colleagues out in the world using it and writing you saying this is a really good product. It helps standardize all the things we're doing, and we're able to share our results with other labs around the world. You know, there's really real satisfaction here.
That's a great philosophy, though, of management. And I wonder where that came from with you. Was that always something that you felt was necessary, that you needed to bring people in, trust them, give them a reasonable latitude to do things, and that it would all work out? Or, you know, did you have to overcome, anxiety about that at all? What was it about you that created that culture?
Well, you know, we're scientists, and science is all about this, discovering the truth about things. So we're all about truth and honesty and openness and transparency. And I think that is, you know, really, really important. And science graduates, you know, they don't go into science to make money. They go into science to make the world a better place, and to provide them with an environment where they can feel that they're doing that and fulfilling their dreams to do good science and have it appreciated is the sort of company that we have and which I want to grow and keep growing.
Yeah. Look, 20% year over year growth is extraordinary. But where were the impediments in the early days for you? Was it finances? Was it talent? Where were the early impediments for you that you managed to overcome?
There were no real impediments. I mean, I got a lot of advice that I should get investors and really grow the company because there's competition out there. But I saw a number of my colleagues, not do well with investors for whatever reason, because they typically want to go for a really big clinical product that's going to make them a lot of money. And I could see that's high risk, and most things don't work. Only one in 10 sort of works, right? So that's the mantra. So the idea was to have many products that all support research. So we didn't have to go at get clinical approval from the FDA or Health Canada. We could always be improving these products and making them better without going through some regulatory process. So that was the basis of the company. And the result was that we got a lot of products out there. But now our dilemma is that it's not really a dilemma, it's a huge opportunity. People, many scientists think that their products or their ideas are going to go clinical, and they need to be using products that have are made GMP, that is good manufacturing practice standards, so that they can be used clinically. So now we're making starting to make all our medias and our cell separation systems GMP, so they can be used clinically. But this requires much more sophisticated facilities and a lot more paperwork and background development. But we're doing it, and that's that. We're moving towards becoming like a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah, when you see a company shift like what you're doing, at what point do you then does it register with you that you need a whole set of skills in an operation that you didn't have before? I guess what I'm looking for here is, how nimble have you had to be through these 30 years in order to stay this step ahead?
Well, the idea is to delegate to people who know more than you do, right? And if you do that well, and I've been very fortunate in hiring people who are really good, you bring in the talent, and at the same time you're training people up internally. So we have like 600 internal training courses in stem cell technologies, from all sorts of, just how to use a certain instrument to our business boot camp, which takes several months and is quite comprehensive. So the idea is bringing in the real talent that you need, that you can't bring up as quickly as you might want to, but also at the same time be upgrading people internally.
Was it ever tempting, ever, to not locate here? Was it to go to Toronto, to go to Silicon Valley, to go to Europe, to go somewhere where maybe the incentives would have been much greater for you to situate?
No, well, because we're an international company, I mean, only 3% of our sales in Canada, so it doesn't really matter in a way where we are in the world, because we're selling basically by air freight from our basically four distribution centers around the world. So the idea is that we will stay here in British Columbia, and there's a great workforce, and once you're here, you don't want to leave, right? See, there's a lot of churn goes on in say Boston or San Diego or San Francisco and the big biotech centers. No, people, once they come to Vancouver, they love it and they stay, right? So that's a real asset for us.
Yeah, well, and I think it's fair to say, and you're proud of this. You pay people well, right?
Yeah.
You have to be paid pretty well to not want to leave this place because it is a costly place to go. Now I'm going to ask you to pick. You've got so many products, you've got so many developments. Is there one that's like in your heart, the special product that you've had over 3 decades?
Well, we started with a product which we called methyl cellulose, which allows you to identify the stem cells in blood, right? So you take the white cells in blood and you put them in culture. Only one in 10,000 will grow, the rest die off. But those that grow in the right culture media give you a colony of beautiful red cells or white cells, and it's a beautiful thing to behold. And that's our first product. I'm still in love with it, right? You look at it, you see things growing. We're sort of super gardeners in a way, right? So it's very rewarding to see the flowers as they come and blossom. So yeah, that is my favorite product, and it's the gold standard for measuring blood-forming stem cells and studying how they go wrong in leukemia and other malignancies of the blood.
You know, do you ever contemplate how many lives have been saved?
No, I don't know. Because we're sort of low down in the chain, right? People, we contribute the tools that help people make their discoveries. So, you know, I've never made an attempt to do that, but I'm sure we've played a serious role.
Yeah, you had probably a really interesting perspective on the pandemic, and I asked a prominent scientist recently about this, on whether it was worrisome as someone in this field. For a lot of the negative sentiment directed at science in the pandemic, and a lot of people who thought they were experts, who were prepared to denigrate the work of science, has this over the last 3 years, has it worried you about some of the climate around discussion of science in society?
Not really, no. I mean, when COVID happened, of course, our sales plummeted because most of our sales were to academic labs, and those labs closed down. You know, students went home, right? And so, but then the biotech industry, realized that there was investment needed to get vaccines and other treatments up and running, and so more money poured in, and biotech companies started to form, and pharma started spending more, and so our sales went up. we benefited significantly, but we were right there at the very beginning in Wuhan, China. They knew they had something bad going on there, and they were trying to grow the lung epithelial cells. But to get the virus that they needed to get the DNA or RNA sequence. And so they switched over to our media for growing pulmonary cells, and they got much better growth and got enough virus to get the RNA sequence, which they then shared with the world, which, you know, was a seminal event that allowed then Pfizer and Moderna stuff to make their vaccines.
Yeah, no question. Canadian contribution was pretty vast in that. I'm interested, I'm curious on whether you think a lot of the critique, I'm sure you're not on social media every day, that would be a waste of your time, but the critique of science has just been, in some respects, awful to witness in this, and from a lot of people that feel that they know better. I think it's unheard of in a lot of this.
Yeah, I'm not really that aware of what you're saying. You know, we're just charging on here. We did have a few people who didn't want to get vaccinated, and we made it a rule that you had to do that, and so we let them go. You know, it was a very small number, but some people felt it hadn't been tested properly. You know, there could be down road side effects and so on. But you know, this vaccine is pretty innocuous. I'm a big supporter of science, of course, so I just ignore all these things. I mean, there are a lot of crazy people out there. You just have to look at politics in certain countries and realize that, you know, there are problems. So, you know, but we're just charging on here. And Canada is, you know, well-positioned, but it needs it needs a pharmaceutical and biotech industry, right? We need to be at the cutting edge. We have the universities and the graduates and people who want to work here. And so My goal is to create a very large company that hires all these people and fulfills your dreams. That's my goal.
Yeah, I mean, there has been, I think, a substantial investment and transferring and government programming during the pandemic in order to beef up British Columbia and the life
Yes.
sciences and all of that. And I wonder now whether you sort of see, you know, having carved out all the work that you did over 3 decades, we're now starting to see a sufficient nexus of talent and companies. And therefore, innovation here, that
Yes.
BC now has this worldwide reputation starting to emerge. Is that what you're seeing?
Yes, we definitely, yeah, we definitely do. I mean, the biotech industry is definitely growing beautifully in Greater Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. You know, I identify ourselves with Ireland, which has exactly the same population as British Columbia, you know, about 6, 7 million. And they have become the third largest exporter of pharmaceuticals in the world. Now, they're within the EU and they've got their taxes reduced, so they've attracted these companies, right? But what they don't have so much is the academic background that we have here in our universities. So I think we can attract companies here based on the creativity of the scientists that we're producing in our universities, not just the ones that we can reproduce to make, you know, people who can do the manufacturing, but for the people who can create new products and really be innovative. I think that's our strength. And that's where the universities and government support to Michael Smith Foundation and other just supporting our granting system is really key.
So you poured 3 decades of your life into stem cell technologies. I'll ask a bit of a difficult personal question, but how long do you want to keep at this, Alan?
Well, you know, I'm going to discover immortality through our knowledge of stem cells. So you see, I'm never going to die. I'm going to just keep going on and on and on. That's my goal. I
You're
mean, of course, it's a
the
joke.
Bible. Yeah. Well, no.
But
Of course, these technologies are about longevity, you know.
right. So I want to keep going as long as I can. I mean, see, I had to retire 16 years ago because I was 65 from the university and from the cancer agency. They changed the rule a few months later, so my wife is still working away. She's the oldest employee in the cancer agency. She's still got graduate students and postdocs and technicians and, you know, still going strong. But I had to leave. So that's when I really turned my
You didn't
attention
reapply
to
for your
stem
job.
cell.
You didn't
I'm
reply
sorry.
or reapply for your old job. You didn't ask them for your
No,
job back.
I spent my life fighting with hospital administrators primarily to try to get more resources to support research and do the new things. I mean, you know, I was the instigator that got our bone marrow transplant program going here years ago, right? But it was tough, right? Because there's not enough money in healthcare and they don't want to do anything new. I mean, that's there's all sorts of qualifications there. I got to be careful what I say, but you know, we need
No.
more resources in healthcare.
Yeah,
It's the
well, that's
world's biggest industry. Yeah.
maybe that's the way we can end the conversation, because I do want to ask you about how worried you are about the state of the system. I mean, I think we're getting clearer and clearer understanding of some of the defaults and the deficiencies that exist in what is otherwise a marvelous system of medicine. But you know, I think you can start to sense Canadians are increasingly losing their smugness about the situation and more worried.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm a big supporter of a publicly funded healthcare system, but I'm also believe that you can have a private component as well, that the two can exist productively together, actually. And you know, we are not trained enough doctors. And you know, as I said, Ireland has six medical schools, and they're and the class in Dublin, half of them are Canadians. So, you know, we just need more medical school seats here in Canada. And we shouldn't be bashful about doing it. It's going to be expensive, but we need to do it. And of course, in medical schools, then you start getting a little more research and awareness and so on, which will stimulate the economy in other ways. But you know, right now, we have to pay people appropriately because it's said that, you know, a quarter of all medical graduates in Canada go to the US along with the same number of nurses and pharmacists. I mean, this is not good. How do we keep these people here? And we really have to do that because look, 30% of the people in British Columbia don't have a doctor, right? I mean, this is a travesty. So yeah, we need to do something about it.
Well, listen, let's try to connect again when you're at the 40-year spot with the company, and we'll hear from you then. But in the meantime, I'm really privileged to talk to you and to know you a bit, and I hope our viewers today understand a little bit more about you as a result of our talk. But thanks so much for your time today.
Okay, thank you, Kirk. Okay, bye.
I'm Kirk Point, publisher and executive editor at Business in Vancouver. Thanks for watching.